Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're going to record this daily editorial with Chris Temple before I head into the New Orleans Investment Conference. Again, if anybody is in New Orleans for this conference, please either swing by my booth or drop me a line, fleck@kereport.com, and happy to set up a little chat. Chris, let's start off by talking about the jobs data that we saw today. Payrolls grew 250,000, 50,000 more than expected, no net revisions over the prior 2 months, and more importantly, I think, hourly earnings rose 0.2% month over month and 3.1% year over year. Really across the board, this was strong data. What do you have to say?
Well, it's very strong data. There was no single sector that lost jobs. There had been some discussion as to how Hurricane Michael may have impacted the numbers, good or bad, but bottom line is this was as strong or even stronger of a jobs report as anybody expected. I'm sure that the president and the Republican Party will be crowing about this going into the midterm election on Tuesday. But the big one, Corey, as you pointed out, is that we have now in the trailing 12 months a 3.1% year-over-year wage gain. That's the first time that that number on a trailing 12-month basis has been above 3% since, you have to go all the way back to April of 2009. The labor force participation rate improved a couple of ticks, even though the headline unemployment number of 3.7% stayed unchanged. So the net result was that the plunge in the U.S. dollar of the last 2 days, chiefly due to the China rumor that we'll also talk about, has reversed course. And with it, of course, the spike in gold yesterday, that has stopped this morning because of the dollar catching its breath. So we'll see. I mean, this is something that the Fed has been saying it's wanted to look at and see for a while to determine whether or not they're going to stay on their steadily tightening course, and that is wage gains finally starting to catch up and add to the overall picture of inflation moderating a bit higher. So, they're not going to make any changes based on this 1 month, but it certainly is a reason why we saw the dollar firm up. We've seen yields move higher across the Treasury complex, and it's one of the big reasons why, if not the biggest reason why, a 350-point further gain in the Dow futures early this morning is now, as we're recording this about a half hour after the markets opened, we're up less than 100 points in the Dow, and of course the Nasdaq is down because of Apple getting hit.
Now, Chris, when it comes to these hourly earnings and wage gains starting to pick up and seeming to be on that uptrend that I know a lot of people were almost waiting for a couple years, how much does this impact inflation expectations? The wage gains were kind of one of the aspects of inflation that were really lagging. Now that they're coming back, you have to assume that more inflation expectations, higher inflation expectations, are going to be around.
Well, they will be, but Corey, as I talk about in my upcoming issue this weekend, there is a lot of evidence already of rising cost pressures, chiefly to businesses. I mean, I don't care if you talk about Mohawk Industries, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Whirlpool, a number of them recently have talked about their own rising costs. Now, the question is, will they be able to pass these costs on to consumers or not? And this whole thing that you're getting from quite a few corporations that have reported is all coalescing into this stagflation-like environment that you and I have talked about so many times, as perhaps on the horizon. I know Doc has talked about this. As far as the wage numbers specifically, a lot of people are accusing the Fed, rightly so, of worrying about they're fighting the last war. In the 1970s, you had a term come into the popular lexicon, at least among economists and market watchers, called cost push inflation. And it was this vicious cycle where you had workers get higher wages. That led to companies having higher costs because, in part, of higher wages. They would pass on those higher costs to consumers. Consumers would be feeling that pinch and squawk that they need more of a raise and so forth. We live in a totally different world today. than we had in the 1970s. And for a lot of reasons, globalization, the fact that labor today by corporate America is treated ever more as a commodity, there are a lot of reasons why structurally wages can't move up a lot, because American workers, right or wrong, have to compete to a very great extent with workers in other parts of the world. And so you're never going to see, any time that I can see coming down the road, the environment you had where if inflation moves up 4 or 5%, a lot of people say that's the true cost of living today for the average family. Who is getting a 4 or 5% wage increase from corporations today? I don't think very many people. So, you know, if you're seeing wages, if this 3% plus number is ratified for the next few months, to me, that means that inflation is even worse than that in some other measures. This is just going to be a lagging indicator, certainly not a leading one.
Okay. Well, one other thing that I think caught some investors' attention yesterday was that Wall Street Journal article that was talking about U.S. companies raising prices on pretty much everything across the board. As you alluded to earlier, this data point and inflation coming maybe more on the table for people is, you would think, only going to make the Fed try to stick to their rate hiking course, won't it?
All else being equal, yes. If wages are moving up and finally ratifying the view that the Fed needs to keep incrementally moving in order to head off any bigger spurt in not only wage inflation but elsewhere, then yes, all else being equal, this report today certainly does galvanize their game plan to keep on with these methodical rate hikes.
Yeah, and that we are going to be hearing from the Fed right after the midterm. So it'll be, I know, very closely watched to see what they have to say. Let's also talk about some of the moves that we saw yesterday. The U.S. dollar really moved down aggressively. That put a nice buy into the precious metals, gold specifically. And a lot of this seemed to be on the back of a tweet by Trump and news stories talking about how Trump was telling his staff to get some paperwork in order to prepare for the potential deal between China at these G20 meetings. Trump is talking a big game about getting a deal done. But again, this is only talk right now, but it did have some impacts on the markets yesterday. What do you think about what Trump is, it sounds like, trying to hint to the markets, but it might just all be part of a bigger game plan?
Well, you know, you and I started talking about this over a week ago. Last Friday, I told my members to sell our short positions where emerging markets are concerned. Darn glad I did, because that's gone dramatically the other direction this week. But, you know, I've said that the odds have grown that later this month, when Trump meets with President Xi at the G20 meeting down in Argentina, that you may well see at least some kind of an attempt to call a truce in this trade war. We don't know what the parts of this are going to be, what they can possibly be. There's a lot of work to be done. And the rhetoric until just yesterday was still all very firm from the Trump administration. But the president tweeted out that he had had a nice conversation with President Xi, that things went well, and he thinks that maybe there might be some thawing coming. And I'll tell you what, as soon as that story hit yesterday and the media ran with it, you didn't want to be short anything where it concerns commodities or risk assets or emerging market stocks or none of that. It's not time yet to bet aggressively on this outcome. A lot of cynics this morning, Corey, are suggesting that the president put that out simply in an attempt to add further fuel to this stock market rally this week and make the Republicans and himself, of course, look better as we get into next Tuesday's election. Maybe that's the case. Maybe it's not. You know, and I've talked a lot in the past with you and otherwise about how you've got competing influences within the White House. And I've said it 100 times, if it was only up to President Trump, he wants this trade war to end. And he wants it to end on his terms, with having successfully, from the stronger position of the U.S. economically and with our financial markets these days, he wants to have been able to stare down China, get them to capitulate on technology theft, licensing theft, a lot of this other kind of stuff, reduce tariffs. If he has his way, we will be in a world where nobody, No country on this planet has any kind of import duties or tariffs on anything. We would truly have free and fair trade. So there are others who want to go beyond that, and we'll see who's going to win the day. But, you know, right or wrong, and even if this is as much a political tweet on his part as anything of substance, yesterday's reaction, the dollar dropping, tells you that part of the reason the dollar has gone up is fears of global weakness and a trade war leading to a new global recession. So if there's any sign that that's going to relent, the dollar is going to soften, and those things that benefit, gold, base metals, and pretty much any risk assets will benefit as a result of that. So we'll see how things play out. But it certainly shows us, if nothing else, that the markets are like a coiled spring, and if something of substance comes, Corey, to really call a truce in this trade war and have a good light at the end of the tunnel that's not an oncoming train, there's going to be a lot of room for a rally into year-end and even early next year, especially for those sectors that have been most beaten up because of trade war fears, the base metal stocks, energy stocks, and things like that.
Exactly. And I think that's the major takeaway from yesterday is seeing what type of moves are possible if a deal gets done. Because again, that was only yesterday. But the markets have, I think, gotten so used to going in the other direction of only more tension building with China and the U.S. that, hey, it's giving us a little preview of what might come. But again, I wouldn't be going all in thinking that some deal is going to come out of the G20. But at the same time, there might be a deal. So we'll see. It's just kind of a different scenario when we have the president almost testing the markets to see what they're going to do and testing everybody to see what their reaction is. When we talk about the U.S. dollar, though, and how much it moved just yesterday on the back of this rumor, say we do get a deal, whether it comes to the G20 or later on, how low or how much lower do you think the dollar goes down to, Chris? Does it almost eliminate all the gains that we have seen this year? Or is there maybe a little more equilibrium somewhere maybe in the middle of this range that it settles at?
I think it'd be more in the middle of the range, Corey. This will certainly take one of the reasons away for the dollar strength of the recent past, but you still have at the core of the whole dollar discussion a hawkish Fed. And for as long as that's going to remain that way, there's going to be an upward bias on a dollar. What will happen is that the risk of a major upside breakout because of capital flight, worries over China imploding or a new global recession because of trade, if that goes away, there's going to be a lot less chance of a larger gain in the U.S. dollar index from here. And I think that if we just marked time in the mid-90s or so, give or take a little bit on the dollar index, that would not be enough to keep emerging markets, and it would not be enough to keep industrials and base metals and cyclicals and the like from rallying very strongly. The odd thing about this, in a way, is that if there is an end to the trade war, that's going to be another reason the Fed won't soften its hawkishness anytime soon. But all else being equal, any associated strength in the dollar will be more of that good variety, you know, of the strong economy, rebounding U.S. stocks and that kind of thing. And it's not going to be the run for the hills kind of a spike in the dollar. And one more thing, too, I need to remind everybody real quick, Corey, is that we're going to get another clue as to how serious anything with China might be after this weekend. Because keep in mind, folks, you and I talked about this the other day, Corey, the date for the imposition of the sanctions on Iran is Sunday. China has already dropped some hints that it is going to accede to U.S. demands to enforce those sanctions. If they follow through with that, that's another part of the reason why it is more likely than not that there will be a trade breakthrough, because President Trump will be of a mind to reward that if he possibly can.
All right, Chris, appreciate your comments to wrap up this week. And again, I apologize for not getting anything else up today, but I will be at that New Orleans Investment Conference. If anybody even can't make the show, but they want me to check out any companies that are there, please, again, just email me or comment below this interview. I will sporadically be checking on the website throughout the day to see if anybody has any comments on the companies that are at the show. Chris, thanks for breaking down again today, and have a great weekend.
All right, Corey, you have fun down over there in New Orleans. I'm sorry I couldn't make it this time around.